So this was the scene on Wall Street yesterday. Jubilation.
Come on.
Cheers erupting as the Dow Jones Industrial Average crossed that 10,000 mark. A welcome sign of economic recovery. Maybe. It's happened 25 times before, actually, so it's certainly not unprecedented, and we're still 4,000 points below the 2008 all-time high. So we're going to find out exactly whether or not that was a true cause for celebration with Louise Story, finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times, and Ed Andrews, Washington economics correspondent for The New York Times. Louise, the Dow Jones closed above 10,000. Does that mean that people are actually making real money?
Good morning. Well, if you think about it, it's a little depressing that we were at 10,000 in March 1999. That's the first time it burst through this level. And there's actually a lot of similarities here because back then they passed out these Dow 10,000 baseball caps and people put them on and they popped open champagne. And yesterday they passed out Dow 10,000 baseball caps again.
They said
Dow
10,000 2.0.
But you know, here we are 10 years later. And if you think of what the stock market is supposed to be for average investors out there, it's supposed to be this place where if you put your savings, your retirement portfolio, and you just have some patience over a few decades, you'll make a good return. And I would say zero in 10 years is not a good return.
I would imagine most people would agree with you. So, I mean, is the Dow a good indicator of the economy? Is this a strong sign of the economic recovery in the U.S.?
So, you know, it is an indicator. It certainly indicates what investors think about the future earnings of the companies that are in this index. They're mostly large companies, but it's not a direct indicator because, first of all, stock prices are often wrong. I mean, they're often based on people feeling a certain euphoria or people feeling a certain pessimism. You know, so it has this relation. It also has the relationship of if we all see the stock market going up and we all see our portfolios doing better, then maybe we'll go to the shopping malls and spend more money and maybe it will help the economy just to have a better mood out there. So it has kind of a tangential, psychological, fuzzy relationship, but it's definitely not tied to the direct economy.
So Ed Andrews, Washington economics correspondent for the New York Times. This is all coming amidst these new earnings reports from our major banks. We're expecting profits to be announced by Goldman Sachs today, which many people say is a sign of the economic recovery. But at the same time, these big banks are owned, many of them, in part by the U.S. government and by the American taxpayers. Are they expected to pay back the bailout money they collected?
Well, it turns out that the Treasury Department now would like to see more of these companies pay back the money that that they infused into them 1 year ago. The funny part about this is that when the Treasury Department started doing this a year ago, they were basically force feeding it, ramming the money down the throats of a couple of these companies that claim that they didn't need it. And so now, though, things are looking better, at least with some of the big institutions, and their profits are up. Their pay packages are up to record levels in some cases, and Treasury is saying, you know, hey, it would be nice to see that money paid back. And
is that really how they're saying it? It would be nice. It's like a little nice suggestion.
They're kind of in a funny position. They don't want to encourage banks to get into a weakened position. They actually, you know, over the long haul, they want banks to have higher capital positions than they have in the past, at least in the past decade. They want them to have strong capital buffers against future risks and losses, but the banks have been able to raise a lot of capital in the last year. They've been making a lot of money in the last quarter or so, and more importantly, you know, the Treasury feels like or officials are beginning to feel that that the banks can replace the government stake with money raised through capital sources, quite easily. The trouble is that the banks are now going, well, you know, yeah, but we, if we do that, we're going to dilute shareholders. So they're people that were kind of hostile about taking government money a year ago.
Now don't want to give the money back.
Yeah.
So, Louise, you know, we've been hearing a lot about banks reporting profits. We've also heard that many of the salaries and bonuses are right back to the level they were before the economic meltdown.
That's
the,
right.
So the banks have they have the money, right, to pay back the government loans?
You know, they're all in different positions, but there are some that have it. And it's interesting, when Ed was talking, it was reminding me, Ed, I'm sure you remember, a kind of famous story from a year ago when the Treasury Department called the 9 banking chiefs from the largest banks into that secretive meeting where they first gave them the bailout money. It's been reported that Jamie Dimon, the chief executive of J.P. Morgan, kind of looked around at his peers when they were passing out the money and said, this is kind of cheap money. They're not, the government's not really charging us much for that. And that's what we're seeing now with these banks who don't want to give it back. J.P. Morgan did give it back, but there's some who are resistant because it is cheap capital.
Yeah,
it's a good deal for the banks. And even though Treasury could probably use that money now to help real Americans, maybe use that money to help unemployed people or something instead, the banks kind of like this cheap capital.
Okay, I imagine that we're going to get more details about this as we move forward. Louise Story, finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times, and Edmund Anders, Washington economics correspondent for The Times. Thanks to both of you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.